This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Someday,
the chairman of the board.
When the world is cold,
up there on stage in his tuxedo, his tie undone. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning. He's got a glass of scotch and a cigarette in his hand.
Tonight,
his night's just getting started too.
Yes, you're lovely. With your
called the way you look tonight.
And your cheeks so soft, there is nothing for me but to love you. And the way you look.
All right. Top stories in the early board. As I said, there's some interesting news today. Number one, the VA may have mishandled thousands of sexual assault cases. Based on guidelines evidently issued by the VA. Veterans that applied for benefits, those cases were denied. So I guess the silver lining in all this is at least now they've recognized it. But Jesus Christ, I mean, you got to be kidding me. But let me just tell you, one of the problems with the VA is, and I know this is going to sound horrible of me to say, but look, when you go there, It is like the regional capital for obese people as employees, right? Now I don't want to judge obese people, but I kind of will, you know. So what are we asking for them, right? People that can't take care of themselves physically or somehow. I know Mac, you're a horrible person, but look, when you see that man, it's like, come on, what the hell's going on here? Oh, shocker. They didn't get off their dead asses to do anything? Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the VA, man. Clown show. And again, I know there's good people that work there. But let me tell you, you have to rest on the body of your work. And the body of your work is, if you ask Americans, do you want to be involved in a health system like the VA? You know, the answer would be, not only no, but fuck no. Story number two, Donald Trump's attorney and fixer Michael Cohen pleads guilty to 8 federal counts. Duncan Hunter, number 3, GOP lawmaker, Marine vet, indicted on corruption charges. Number 4, Russia to deliver the S-400 missile to Turkey next year. And number 5, NASA begins test flights to study physiological events on military pilots. What? Like, I thought we'd been doing that kind of stuff for a long time. Huh? All right. Number 6. 1. Extraordinary sacrifice. Air Force Tech Sergeant John Chapman posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor. Number 7. F-35 landing gear collapses after an in-flight emergency at Eglin Air Force Base. Yeah, the plane's nose landing gear collapsed, leaving the fifth generation fighter face down on the runway. Oops. Nobody likes to read that. Number 3, Trump strategy is working. Departing general in Afghanistan says we talked about that. 4, military moving sea and air assets away from Hawaii. Standard operating procedure. The ships go to sea. The planes go someplace else. That way they don't get damaged and smashed around. Number 5, the force may not be with us. Stratcom could lose space duties with the new Space Force. Ruh-roh. Stratcom. Trust me, they'll figure it out. Overseas operations. All right, there's this story. 1 year later, McCain sailors and families locked in a legal battle with oil tanker owner. Now, I don't know do they think the oil tanker's at fault in this? So you have two ships going in the same direction, right? And the McCain turns in front of this, because where you see the McCain get hit, you're looking at that like, what? Yeah. The McCain essentially turns left in front of the tanker and gets T-boned because of a bridge, right? The physical bridge, you know, the helmsman, the navigator and all that, those guys screw it up. And the CO of the ship right in the middle of it. So anyway, a year after 10 sailors died when the destroyer John McCain lurched left into a commercial vessel outside of Singapore, a legal battle rages over who is responsible for the collision and who should pay for it. So far, 48 McCain sailors and families of the fallen have filed personal injury and wrongful death claims against the owner of the Alnick MC, a hulking oil tanker that collided with the warship inside the bustling Malaccan Straits on August 21st, holy smokes, a year ago to on Tuesday, according to federal court records. Their claims total well in excess of $60 million. Attorneys for the Allnex owner, Energetic Tank Incorporated, wrote in court filings. At the same time, the U.S. government is pursuing its own claim against Allnex owners for the McCain's damages. The company seeks similar damages from the federal government. Court filings indicate that the Liberian-flagged Allnex suffered about $300,000 in collision damage, but the shipping company's attorneys predict the cost to Minda McCain could reach $100 million, a figure federal attorneys haven't repeated in their motions. Instead, they've concentrated on what they say are a long list of seamanship failures by the Allnex crew. They failed to keep proper lookouts. They lacked trained mariners on the bridge in congested waters, never communicated with McCain, and at no time sounded a danger signal, veered away from the warship, or followed the international rules of maritime transit, the filing contends. Armed with the Navy's own reports into the collision and information gleaned from the ongoing court-martial proceedings against several of the McCain's crew, Energetic Tank's attorneys say the fault really lies with the Americans. We have a pretty good idea of what the arguments are against the McCain and the competence of the crew, said Lawrence Brennan, a retired Navy captain, military attorney, and professor at Fordham University's School of Law in New York. Those are all locked in the criminal proceedings. We then get into what the Allnex could have done, should have done, to avoid the collision, he said. Assessing how to apportion the blame for the deaths and the damages to both vessels will be key to resolving the legal battle. Attorneys for the U.S. government and Energetic Tank Incorporated declined to comment for the story. And then you have a chronicle of people claiming what their injuries were. When the schematics that I've seen, given the distances the two vessels were apart, you know, I'm sure, you know, blowing whistles and communicating, but a Navy warship that's operating at a higher rate of speed that's overtaking vessels isn't the first responsibility on them. So when you apportion it, what is it, 90-10? In terms of damages? So, interesting story. Next story, how should, and we talked about this, an electronic act of war. At what point does your meddling constitute an act of war? The fact that you stand up in public and say that we didn't do that, and yet your efforts are ongoing? At what point does that become an act of aggression? Just because you do it electronically means it's not an act of aggression? So when you start, let's just say this. So when Russia manipulates, somehow or other hacks into a power grid, although I saw something that said, look, controlling the power grid is not in any way, shape, or form connected to the internet. Okay? Just so people know. And I read that and I went, what? I didn't know that. So, anywho, so how does America respond to Russia's alleged misbehavior in cyberspace? Do we not respond because we're doing the same thing? A group backed by the Russian government has attempted to hack the U.S. Senate and Republican think tanks, according to Microsoft, representing a possible opportunity for the United States to respond in cyberspace under the United States' new rules of engagement. Okay. Now, these were signed by the president and published last week, I believe. In a statement released late Monday night, Microsoft said that Russian-backed group operates under the name Strontinium, as well as Fancy Bear or APT-28, attempting a phishing operation on the U.S. Senate, the International Republican Institute, and the Hudson Institute. Both groups, the International Republican Institute and Hudson Institute, both are vocal in talking about Russian oligarchs, their how their interests explain Vladimir Putin's behavior, blah, 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 blah. The group set up at least six fake websites that mimic the appearance of the organization's real pages, according to the company, apparently in the hopes users would submit their passwords. In this case, the judge ruled that the fake website should be disrupted and control of the six internet domains be transferred into the hands of Microsoft Digital Crimes Unit. Experts and lawmakers, however, have urged the administration to take a tougher response to Moscow's activity. Quote, "We need to start pushing back on the Russians, and we need to do it consistently," said Jim Lewis, a senior vice president at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, being critical of both the Obama and Trump administrations. Lewis suggested a menu of options for a response, including targeted financial sanctions on oligarchs, investigating Russian doping scandals, revealing corruption practices, and even blocking access to all Russian domain websites for a day. People are going to say, gosh, that's not American to do that, Lewis said. My answer is, it used to be American that we would stand up for ourselves. You don't deter cyber, you don't deter Russia, Frank Clefufo, director of the Center for Cyber and Homeland Security at George Washington University, said. Offensive cyber operations are a deterrent that can help defend U.S. networks. If it is clear who is responsible for the attempted hacks, I think those should be potential options. So, interesting discussion that goes on. So, again, you play electronically and you don't have to pay? Right? I think we would all say that that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. All right, another story. Two-star Army general relieved amid an investigation. The commander of the Army's Combined Arms Support Center at Fort Lee, Virginia, was removed from his position on Wednesday. Training and Doctrine Command spokesman confirmed to the Army Times. Lieutenant General Paul Hurley has served as commander of the Army's Sustainment Think Tank since June of 2017. He is currently the subject of an official investigation. We cannot comment any further. Unbelievable. But yeah, I swear to God, it happens every week. Army EOD soldiers will soon get a new kit as well as new robots. Story Marine Corps Times. The Marine Corps is giving $5,000 to recruits who go infantry for 6 years. What can you buy for $5,000? The Marine Corps is once again dishing out $5,000 bonuses to recruits who sign up for infantry for 6 years. The MAR admin posted yesterday states recruits who decide to go grunt for 6 years and complete the training for either rifleman, light armored vehicle, machine gunner, mortarman, infantry assault, or anti-tank missile gunner can get the cash. 6 year contract. Boom. Here's some other bonuses. Electronic maintenance, $8,000 bonus. These are enlistment, not reenlistment. Supply, accounting, and legal, 3,000. Information and comm technology, 5,000. Cyber, intel, crypto, ops, and plans. You would think that would be a lot. It's not, 2,000, which means they have enough of those people. Motor transport, 4,000. Infantry option, 5,000. Check this out. Music, 6,000. You get more money come in as a musician than as a grunt. Whoa. CBRN, 7,000. You sign up to go chemical warfare and all that nonsense? $7,000 bonus. The reenlistment bonuses can go up to $70,000. Yeah, some of the bonuses and some of the multiples, you'd hear, you're like, what? That's pretty impressive. All right, I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to go around. I want to talk a little bit more about Sergeant Chapman. I want to talk about Secretary Mattis's letter about court-martialing as opposed to administrative action. I want to talk about a little bit about campaign finance, and I want to talk about a little bit about Camp Lejeune Water. So whatever you do, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio on a Thursday. Coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, A text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Colleen's got a volleyball game today. It's called Summer Wind. Francis Albert Sinatra, the chairman of the board.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me. All summer long we sang a song and then we strolled that golden sand. Two sweethearts and the summer wind.
Come on, man. In his heyday, there wasn't anybody cooler than Frank Sinatra.
Those days and nights, they went.
Okay. All right. Let me, I want to talk about some things. First of all, the Medal of Honor of Air Force Technical Sergeant Chapman. First of all, long time coming and surrounded in controversy. I would say this, that hats off to the Department of Defense for telling everybody to shut up in color. Because what had happened previous to that, and if you do just do a little search on it, you'll come up with some pretty interesting articles. I want to say, there was an article, there's a long, long, long article, and that's not it. There's a long, long article that I read about this a few months ago when I first saw it. But anyway, let me tell you what happened. You can find articles in the New York Times about it. There's a publication called Business Insider that writes a lot of really good military stuff. And so you see the name Business Insider, I think your instinct is, what the hell, what is that? Business Insider picks up a story that's written by Paul Soldra. You know what? We need to get him on to talk about this. But the headline is, Special Operators Are Bitterly Fighting Over the Latest Medal of Honor Announcement. He wrote it for Task and Purpose. Business Insider somehow picked it up and ran the story. These are the bullets, right? Britt Slubinsky, senior chief, right? Controversial guy, you know, accused of war crimes, disfiguring, some bad stuff. But anyway, Slubinsky rallies his team. First of all, they go up, let me just explain what it was, what they did. All right, Britt Slubinsky and his team are inserted on a hilltop on March 4th, 2002. Okay? seven-man reconnaissance team tasked with reaching a 10,469-foot peak, where his team, right, accompanied by an Air Force combat controller, right, Technical Sergeant John Chapman, would call in intelligence reports and direct airstrikes. Okay, now, let me just tell you, so you hear that, right? So that's what they were supposed to do. That's what they were going there to do, right? When you see the package that these guys roll with in terms of the drones that they control and the fixed-wing assets they control and to take a look at things before they execute missions, the first question that you ask is, how the fuck can these guys get surprised by somebody dug in on top of the hill? How does that happen? Well, what can be the only conclusion? There's people up there. And we didn't know about it? So who put this shit together? And so, again, I'm critical of the SEALs, and I don't hide it. Right, and it's not because, look, it's only because I've worked with them and I've seen this kind of shoddy shit too many times. So anyway, they go booming onto this mountain, and guess what? They get into a firefight as soon as they land. The article goes on, but the plan almost immediately went to hell after the team encountered heavy Al-Qaeda resistance on the peak, and in its aftermath. The deadly tally for that day was 7 Americans killed, 12 wounded, and 2 CH-47s shot down. Right? And this is just going to be a bullshit insert, because if there's anybody up there, we would offset the insert, we'd infiltrate 2 there, and then we'd whack them before we took the position. But you don't send reconnaissance teams in to an active position, but this is what they did. So you immediately you're like scratching its head. So this turns into a shit show. Okay? So you have Slabinski, right, is awarded the Medal of Honor for what happened after and in the midst of all this. But think about that. 7 killed, 12 wounded, 2 helicopters shot down. And it's supposedly, right, a covert insert of a SEAL team to do reconnaissance. How do you fuck it up that bad? And let me just tell you, you know, normally when we go do shit, you know, we have, you know, ISR taking a look at it. When we're going to insert teams and stuff like that, we've looked. We know what activities in the area. You drop these guys right on an active position. I mean, they jumped off the bird and they were engaged immediately from guys in positions. The drone video is Chapman fighting with Al-Qaeda guys in a cave, killing them and then continuing to fight. The forensics relative to his body, on his hands and things like that, all confirm what the drone video showed them. So anyway, okay, so this thing winds down. Almost immediately after, the blame game starts, as it naturally should. Members of the Air Force and the Naval Special Warfare communities took sides and offered competing versions of the events. For most people, this seems like armchair quarterbacking, but the second-guessing of decisions that day has been going on between special operators for years. Air Force combat controllers largely believe John Chapman alone deserves the Medal of Honor for fighting on after being left behind, while SEALs largely believe Chapman was dead when Slabinski made the call to leave. So that's where it starts. But it gets worse. Okay? There's an article that was published in Newsweek, right? And it was published hours after the president announced that Slabinski would receive the Medal of Honor, written by a guy named Sean Naylor. And what he does is he chronicles the lengths that the SEAL community went to, right, to get the medal for Slabinski, but also to destroy Chapman's opportunity to get the medal as well. Okay, because here, this was the bottom line for the SEALs. They don't leave people behind. And if Chapman is awarded the Medal of Honor, it means that Slabinski left them. And they're not having that. The Air Force version was, hey, look, Slabinski made a mistake. It doesn't negate the rest of what he did that day, but he made a mistake. We support Slabinski's Medal of Honor. We'd like them to support Chapman's Medal of Honor. SEALs were having none of it. All right? So this is just a little excerpt from that article. What has shocked and angered some sources familiar with the battle is that Mattis has also recommended the same award for then Senior Chief Petty Officer Britt Slabinski, the SEAL team leader who allegedly left Chapman behind. Some special operators blame Slabinski not only for Chapman's death, but also for the lost lives of six other special operators on that mountain. Others say it's absurd to recommend someone for the Medal of Honor for his bravery in a fight in which he left a teammate behind, albeit by mistake. Informed by a Newsweek reporter that Slabinski was in line for the Medal of Honor, an Army special operator who took part in the operation was aghast. You kicked me in the nuts when you told me that. Mike, a former Air Force targeting analyst who monitored the Predator feed from Tucker Guard fight that night, in real time, rewatched it twice last year at the Air Force request, was similarly taken aback. I'm completely shocked that the Navy is putting that package up. Some observers were angry at the Navy for even recommending Slabinski for the award, which they claim was part of a campaign to sabotage the Air Force efforts on behalf of Chapman. Such a campaign would be unprecedented, according to military awards expert Doug Sterner. Quote, I cannot think of a single instance in which one branch of service opposed the Medal of Honor for another, he says. Beyond the Medal of Honor, politics playing out in the foreground, some critics have questioned other facets of the battle. First, there was a decision to land directly on the mountaintop. Slabinski's plan was to land at the base of Tucker Gar and then hike up to the top, which is in keeping with the solid tactics that would have put the team at far less risk. But, he told the New York Times, maintenance delays and pressure from his leadership led him to nix the safe approach and go straight to the top. Let me tell you this, that's bullshit. If you don't agree with that stuff, you don't do it. Ultimately, you have the say in that. Anyway, then it goes on to document what happened. Again, Naylor writes in his Newsweek article, Army and Air Force special operators blame their losses on poor decision-making by the SEALs, and this is just my editorial comment, something that plagues them. All right? The whole Marcus Luttrell, what is that one? The same kind of poor decision-making that puts them in a shit sandwich. Right? The Newsweek article goes on. Some members of the Chapman's unit, the 44th STS, were so upset that they tried to avoid assignments with SEAL Team 6, says a former Delta Force operator. So, interesting article that, and we'll see if we can get, I don't know how he'll do it, but we'll see if we can get Paul Soldier on and talk about it. But again, so what you saw yesterday was a pretty face that has been put on all this. And then again, Slabinski in attendance to the whole thing. Pretty interesting to watch. And I'll say this, the way Secretary Mattis papered over it was he recommended that the award be given to both of them. Okay? So again, this is emblematic, and the way I found out about, what is the Marcus Luttrell thing? What's the name of the book he wrote? lone survivor. Okay, the poor planning is that it was a Marine operation, and the way I got introduced to it was somebody who was a big fan of the SEALs said, "Hey, what do you think about that?" And I didn't know anything about it, and I said, "Well, this is my experience. Bad operational decision making. For whatever reason, they step in it all the time. And you can go back to Panama when they got online and walked down a runway and got a bunch of guys killed. Like, what in God's name were you doing? They came to learn how to shoot mortars right after that. And I was teaching at IOC, so that they came to Range 7 in Quantico, and we taught them. Hey, you guys are all of a sudden like a week out. Hey, you guys got to go teach mortars to some DOD guys. Like who? SEALs. And this is, I can't remember, they were back operating again after the Panama thing, and they figured they needed mortars. And so we asked them, what happened? And they say, we're not talking about it. I'm like, okay. So anyway, that was all papered over yesterday. But if you care to do some reading, it's a pretty interesting story, what went on behind that. Mattis letter on court-martialing and discipline. I'll read it to you real quick. Memorandum for secretaries of the military departments, chiefs of the military services, commanders of combatant commands. Subject, discipline and lethality. As we aggressively execute our national defense strategy and make our forces more lethal, I remind you that an enhanced lethality demands more than increasing the size of our formations and obtaining newer and more advanced equipment. It also requires having a more disciplined force. General Washington once commanded an outmanned and outgunned group of patriots that defeated Great Britain, then the strongest military in the world. He observed, quote, discipline is the soul of an army. It makes small numbers formidable, procures success for the weak, and esteem to all. Today, we are the most powerful military in the world and find ourselves in a competition among great powers. Our national defense strategy requires us to expand the competitive space to challenge those competitors. We must be better individuals and unit discipline than our enemies. It is incumbent on our leaders to ensure that American forces are always the most disciplined on the battlefield, whatever the domain might be. The discipline of today includes vigilant operational security, protection of electronic equipment, and responsible social media activity. We must demonstrate respect for all service members, build trust, and remove the cancer of sexual misconduct from our ranks. All service members learn to fight well by doing the little things perfectly, otherwise they cannot possibly get the big things right when all goes wrong. Enforcing standards is a critical component of making our forces lethal. Our leaders must uphold proven standards. They should know the difference between a mistake and a lack of discipline. If a subordinate makes a mistake, leaders should learn to coach them better. But we should not tolerate or ignore lapses in discipline, for our enemies will benefit if we do not correct and appropriately punish substandard conduct. Time, inconvenience, or administrative burdens are not excuses for allowing substandard conduct to persist. The military justice system is a powerful tool that preserves good order and discipline while protecting the civil rights of service members. It is a commander's duty to use it. Military leaders must not interfere with individual cases, but fairness to the accused does not prevent military officers from appropriately condemning and eradicating malignant behavior from our ranks. Leaders must be willing to choose the harder right over the easier wrong. Administrative actions like nonjudicial punishment. And again, the officer of the deck of the USS Fitzgerald was given non-judicial punishment, not even a court-martial. And that's just one case that's illustrative of this point. Administrative actions should not be the default method to address illicit conduct simply because it is less burdensome than the military justice system. Leaders cannot be so risk-averse that they lose their focus on forging disciplined troops ready to ferociously and ethically defeat our enemies on the battlefield. And then this is a quote that he says all the time. We have no God-given right to victory. That's it. Discipline is a competitive edge we must seek and maintain each day if we are to keep America safe from its enemies. As General Washington learned firsthand, discipline will make us strong and more lethal. Therefore, let nothing, and nothing's italicized, prevent us from becoming the most disciplined force this world has ever known. J.N. Mattis, Secretary of Defense. Again, so who is he calling out? He's not calling out individual Marines, sailors, airmen, soldiers. He's not calling them out. He's calling out their leaders, captains, lieutenant colonels, colonels, in charge of court-martialing. And he's telling them, stop sweeping things under the rugs. Sweeping things under the rugs. Start holding people accountable. Do that. It's in your best interest. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about campaign finance reform, but I don't have the time. There's two cases that if you're interested in it, one is called Citizens United, and then that's a 2010 case, I want to say. And then the other one, is it 2010? The other one is a case that was decided in April of 2014, and it struck down Watergate era limits on campaign contributions. And in what has been the disassembling of post-Watergate campaign finance reform and then the McCain-Feingold Act. Okay, so I want to talk about that, but I'm not going to have enough time. Suffice it to say this. A conservative court believes that freedom of speech allows certain things. That is, contributing your money in a way that you want to. While it does accept limits, I want to say the limit is $2,600 per candidate. You've seen limits on how many candidates you can contribute to, right? Struck down. You've seen when you can run ads and how much money you can spend on ads. You've seen those limits struck down. Okay, so when there was a cap placed on how did political action committees grow up, when there was a cap placed on what you can give a campaign that used to run those ads, that got capped. Where did the money migrate to? Oh, we'll create an organization. The organization will be devoted to this issue, which is similar, almost identical to this candidate's position, and the political action committee will run those ads. So that's kind of how... And again, this involves billions of dollars, and those numbers only go up on an annual basis. Okay? So that's the system that gives you Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton as a choice. If the Supreme Court says, yeah, that is our system, how does it change? How in God's name does it change? And the answer to that is, you know, is it doesn't. It doesn't change. So I want to talk about that. So we'll get some people on, and we'll talk about, because again, pretty substantial issue relative to the future of democracy. So money trumps all. It's your First Amendment right to own the democracy, to drown out all other voices because you're successful, and that's your First Amendment right. I struggle with that. And in reading some of the opinions, although I would tell you I would call myself a conservative on this issue, I would tell you that I would side with the moderates in this case. Okay? I would side with the moderates in the case, and I would say that there are reasonable limits to what you should be able to purchase in an election. Your money, and I don't care if you're William Randolph Hearst or George Soros or anybody else, right? Your money should only be allow you to buy a limited voice in the discussion, because there should be something sacred about our elections. I don't know that there is, and I find that troublesome. So when I look at the shit show that goes on in Washington, D.C. today, it's only going to get worse, right? Who's next to be the President of the United States? The Rock? Now, Dwayne Johnson seems to be a nice guy. Is he who we need to be President of the United States? I don't think so. I don't think so. It's just me personally. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. But he's got what it takes. He's interested in politics. He's got name recognition. He can raise money. Does he get a seat? Does he cut? Is he the next person to cut to the front of the line? So what saves the democracy? How is the democracy better served? And now that we don't compromise, and Paul, what changes that? That stupid 60-vote rule in the Senate means you got to have 60 to truly affect, to own both houses. Got to have 60 votes, and then everybody got to stay together. And we've seen that that hasn't been, you know, that doesn't happen often either. So I want to campaign finance report. Reform is something that I'm interested in. How does a democracy survive? What changes? Because I will tell you this, it ain't working very well. It is not working very well. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get the Gunner on. More of Omarine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.